I am Julia.
And together, we are functionally literate. Only together, though. When we're apart, I can't...
I'm an idiot.
I can't function, and Julia can't read.
I can't read anything. So I have to call him, put him on FaceTime to read any of these books. He's over it.
Anyways, no, you can read.
No, I can read.
And we can both function.
Yep, that's true.
I can't read.
I don't function well, but I do function. Mm-hmm, so.
And we're going to function a lot less well here in a little bit. We both, I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret, audience, and maybe you should do this too. Julia and I each popped a edible before we got started with this episode. Not the last one, but this one.
I plead the fifth.
Julia pleads the fifth, but I'm speaking for her.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I think that we're going to have some really good thoughts.
Really great thoughts. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So this is the episode. We are continuing our discussion on the Obelisk Gate.
Yes.
Book 2 of the Broken Earth Trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. This is a Hugo Award winning series. And by that, I mean each book won a Hugo Award each year that these books came out.
Insane.
Between 2016 and 2018. One book a year.
Do you think she wrote the whole trilogy and then just like released it a year at a time? Or how do you think it took her 1 year, only a year to write these, like each book?
I don't know. I mean, the way that this book is written, I would not be surprised with, I mean, I can't speak for the third book, but it does seem like this one, like, I mean, it picks up like straight from the last one.
It would make sense that she wrote this in a sprint.
Yeah, it would not surprise me if she just like wrote all of them like, you know, in one go.
Yeah. And then split them up.
Yeah, like it doesn't feel like she took any time between writing the last one and this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so we are covering chapters 4 through 6 today.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interlude in there somewhere, but the interludes are only ever like a page.
Yeah.
So
not much.
No. So yeah, we're gonna jump into it.
Chapter 4, You Are Challenged. You learn how to stave off boil bugs. Lerna calls you out.
So, boil bugs.
This chapter is fucking gross.
It's so gross. I'm glad you said it.
I like the visual.
So, let's talk about boil bugs before we even get into the chapter itself. They are little blue beetle-looking things.
They look like jewels.
They look like shiny blue jewels. Mm-hmm. And when they latch onto you, they literally fucking boil your skin. They've got this carapace that they stick inside you, and then they, like, shoot out, like, this jet of boiling hot water through their carapace into you, and they literally fucking boil you from the inside.
But also, it's the seasons that make them dangerous. Isn't that right? Like, these aren't generally... If you're not in a season, like, it's totally fine.
So they talked about how boil bugs were in the area, and people knew that's what they were called, but they didn't know why.
They do now.
They do now know why, yes.
And it's absolutely horrific. I don't think I could think of anything.
They also make, like, these giant ash mounds.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a boil bug nest looks, like a giant ash mound.
Oh, my God. You know, I hate ticks. Like, I think that they are the grossest bug.
Yeah.
This is kind of how I was, like, I'm picturing these. Like, they're like, ticks, but they're more, they're blue.
They're
and
big and blue.
And, like, oh, my God. I just, a horrific visual.
Yeah. So, this starts with Aesun, you know, waking up. It's another day. She's been in the comm for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have, like, a specific job. She's just been kind of, like, moving around every day, doing a different job with different groups of people to kind of get to know everyone. Ika approves of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Tonki's doing. I'm getting the impression people are fine with Tonki staying inside.
Yeah, I don't think she's doing a lot of anything.
No, no.
Still not bathing as much as she should.
Yeah. 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 Anyways. So she's like she's waking up and she's like having some food. I remember there was a thing about whether she should eat her own food or the food that the comm gave her.
Yeah.
I think she was deciding to eat her own food until it runs out.
Right. I think she should be eating the comm's food, but that's just me.
Right. She should donate her food to the comm since that's all she's got left.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, she's kind of got a...
She's possessive.
She's... If I was her, and I am, turns out...
As it turns out, I am her. She is me.
I would keep that food for myself in case I need to flee at a moment's notice, and I would eat whatever they had.
You know, that's a point.
I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's a season. Anything goes.
It's true. But, yeah, so there's... She hears this sound, and it takes her a little while to realize it's someone screaming their fucking head off.
Yeah.
Which really makes me wonder, like, man, she must have been groggy, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she was just really focused on eating, but it's like, imagine in the distance hearing someone screaming. Would you recognize it as someone screaming?
I want to think that I would, but I probably not.
I feel like I would. If for no other reason than because I'm going to make this about Baldur's Gate 3. So in Baldur's Gate 3, when you're like playing the game and you're outside, you will just hear people screaming in the distance. And at one point, I got really tired of it. I was like, babe, why is it there's just constantly people screaming in the distance? And she's like, things are not well.
No, they are not well.
Anyways. Circling back to this, someone's screaming and she runs out to go see what the hell's going on. And there's like people moving this guy into Lerna's like infirmary, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's got a makeshift hospital. He's taken right into the infirmary. This dude is screaming.
Yeah.
He is thrashing. He is screaming. And knowing now, like at first I was confused, but knowing it was because he was covered in boil bugs, I don't fucking blame him.
He was being boiled from the inside.
He literally was being boiled from the inside.
Yeah, I'd be
And it's localized
off.
Too, right? Mm-hmm. Like it only boils you in the spot the boil bug is at.
And it's under... His arm, or it, no, the man on his leg.
It's all yeah. over his legs.
Yeah.
There's so many of them. And he's just like, I mean, he's fucking in shock.
Yeah.
You know, and he's screaming and shaking and he won't stop. And so they inject him with something. There was a nurse running with a needle, and Aesun was thinking, that's not safe.
Yeah. I love those ones.
And so, yeah, this nurse injects him with something that knocks him out. Thank God. But
right.
even unconscious, his legs are still shaking.
Yeah.
Right? And so Lerna tries to take off one of these boil bugs, and it boils him.
Yeah.
I mean, it burns him. Yeah. Like it scalds him. He's like, ah! When he tries to pry it off, a little jet of water squirts him, and boiling water, it squirts him. He's like, ah, it's hot. And then that's when Aesun sees that it is a bug because it has carapace wings. It and that's when the carapace wings shift, and then it goes back to like it was.
Right.
And she's like, what the fuck? And this is all in the infirmary.
Right.
Alabaster is here. Right. And so
they're kind of making eyes at each other.
Well, so Alabaster uses his power to get rid of one of them. And Aesun sees him do it. And it's successful, right? It freezes. It shrivels a little bit. And then just kind of pops off.
Yeah.
And then falls to the floor. And so she is like, okay, I need to do this. Because Alabaster can't keep doing it. Because
she
sees in this moment like that like... more of his body turns
he's
to
been,
stone.
He's getting eaten.
Yeah. Like, she realizes if he uses his powers, he will start... That accelerates him turning into stone.
Right.
And so she's like, okay, I can do this. And, like, she... You know, there's a narrative about, like, how difficult this is.
Mm-hmm.
Like... And this was established in the last book, right? Like...
To go small.
Like, any origin can move a mountain.
Right.
Moving a boulder is a bit harder.
Right.
Moving a boil bug, I imagine, would be very
difficult.
Very hard. Yeah. So, but yeah, she doesn't do it quite as well as Alabaster, but she does successfully do it. And she does it to all of the boil bugs on him, which is exhausting for her. When she's done, like, she's just, like, so tired.
Right. To do the small movements that she has to again and again and again for hundreds of bugs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Creepy thing. So when Alabaster starts to turn a little more into stone, like, the Stone Eater kind of reacts in, like, a way that's, like...
Like, yay.
Ooh, can I get up on that? And Alabaster mouths to her later. And Aesun's wondering, like, what later? Are you gonna, like, you can eat my arm later?
Yeah, the Stone Eater's like, supper.
Yeah, like, it. Jesus oh Christ. God. And yeah, this is all like. Oh, wait. So one of them didn't come off.
Okay.
One of them exploded.
You know, you can only be so careful for so long.
Yeah, but yeah, so the last one Lerna uses forceps on, and that's where we see, like, the freaky long proboscis.
Yeah.
And that, so that's, like, how I was able to describe to you, like, because
it's horrible.
So gross.
I hate bugs.
But yeah, so this is all too much for Lerna, so he steps outside to smoke.
Yeah, honestly.
Same.
Yeah.
Is your opinion. Same.
I'm like, I gotta get out of here. This is... And they're smoking a mellow, which is an interesting, like...
So this was an interesting moment.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting moment, I think, for a reason I think a lot of people could relate to. Like, mm-hmm. the act of seeing a doctor smoking a cigarette, right? Like,
it's jarring a little bit.
She's like... Lerna shouldn't be smoking.
Like, you know those are
Mellows are bad for you.
Yeah.
But they also, like, mellow you out.
Right.
Like, that's why they're called mellows. They're not, like, normal cigarettes in our world. They're made of, like, some other kind of leaf entirely. But, like, regardless, the act of smoking is the thing that's bad for you.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, he's smoking on this mellow, and, like, we go out and talk to him, and he's still mad about Torimo. Understandably so.
Right.
You know, I'd be pissed, too. I'm gonna say it.
That's his home.
Yeah. Like, honestly, I think he's handling it a hell of a lot better.
She
than
killed
I
essentially everybody in that town.
And it was, I think it was like a little under 1,000 people or something like that. Like, I don't know.
She turned it into rubble.
Yeah. She did. She did. She broke the water table. Like, this. It wasn't a quick death.
No.
She slowly killed them by destroying their water source.
Yeah. And can't forget that. So,
yeah.
I guess he, you can't blame him for not liking her very much.
Well, so that leads me to my question. Mm-hmm. What in this conversation that he says stood out to you? Because I jotted something down.
Oh, I can't think of anything specifically. I just remembered the mellow and, like, her recognizing that that is a weird thing for a doctor to be doing.
Yeah.
But I can't remember. Say what you were going to say. Maybe it'll ring a
what
bell.
What stood out to me was a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
He says Raga a lot now without hesitation.
Yeah.
That is not a word he has a problem with, when before it never escaped his lips.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be such a nice boy.
used to be.
The big thing that stood out to me was he was saying all this horrible shit to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, I'm saying this because if I don't make you understand, you might have a rusting fit and kill us all.
Yes, yes. Okay. I do remember this.
Yeah. And he was saying, like, he was just talking out, like, how this is going to go, right? Like, the future of things.
And he was also annoyed, too, at one point, right? He was like, why did you not do that from
the get-go. Like, why did you not use your powers like you did from the get-go? And she was like, I didn't know that I could. It wasn't until I saw Alabaster do it that I realized that I could do that.
Yeah.
Because she carefully, like, was able to watch what he did, like, assess what he did to be able to do it. It required, like, an infinitesimally small torus, because that's how they think about it, like, the range of their power.
Yeah.
Like, toruses typically are very big, because toruses usually, by default, are just, like, basically the range of their sessing, like, their immediate sessing. Like, outside of that range, it's less precise.
Right.
But the torus is also, like, the focal point of their powers.
Mm-hmm.
So to, like, make your torus, like, the size of a quarter, when normally it's, like, a quarter mile out from every direction of you.
Yeah.
It's a bit. It's a bit.
It's hard, yeah. Right.
So.
And most origins. I always say it wrong. Yeah. Origins probably don't have that ability to.
No, that's like it's like a 8-ringer or right. something. Like, I'm pretty sure at some point that's what Alabaster says. Like, yeah, you would be an 8th or 9th ringer yeah, by now. Yeah,
that's what. And she's kind of like, why you gotta talk about? Why you gotta talk like
why
that?
Why you gotta make it like yeah. that? Why you gotta make it about the fulcrum, man? Right. Like, I don't want to talk about the fulcrum.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like, so she says to him that she says like, I didn't know I could do it until Alabaster did it.
Right.
And Lerna's like, I don't expect anything from him. He came here to die.
Mm-hmm.
You came here to live. So what are you gonna do? He's putting a lot of pressure on her. He's like, listen, you gotta be like the Messiah. I mean, he doesn't say that. But he right. like that's kind of like the level of expectation he's putting on her because she destroyed Teremo. And because she is that powerful.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, he has definitely, maybe prior when they lived together in Teremo, like, he didn't realize the extent of her power.
Yeah.
But, like, now that he's here, he sees her interact with Alabaster. He sees, like, what she can do. Like, he's like, you have to really step up here.
We really got to do something about Lerna. We got to, like, push him in the right direction, or he's going to become the antagonist real quick.
I know. I know. I don't think that he will, though.
No.
You
don't picture him fucking snapping and killing Alabaster in his sleep? Because let me tell you something. I think if that Stone Eater wasn't there watching him, he might.
I mean, I'm not saying that he won't do things like that, but I don't think that he's going to be, like, ever the main...
Oh, the antagonist? Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's but, the Guardians are
but
the
I could see him becoming one, I guess. But I don't know. I think that even though he has so much hate and spite towards these people, that's like very...
Not towards Origins. Just her. Just right. Asun.
Well, and Alabaster. And also, it's maybe coloring how he feels about every other one, too, because he's using Raga so... openly.
Yeah, so easily. It does
know.
Make me wonder what he thinks about Ika. But like the impression I'm getting is
I know,
he
they
likes
feel like
Ika.
No, yeah, I know. Ika has no enemy. And you know what I mean?
I'm also getting the impression he doesn't really feel one way or the other strongly about Cutter. Mm-hmm. Like so I don't think this is like a racism thing.
Oh, okay.
This is a personal vendetta I think this is.
That's fair. Like, if there ever was one good reason for one, it would be now.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, so like he storms off mm-hmm. after having this discussion where he spells out like how they're all going to die. This is where the cannibalism comes in.
Yeah.
Right. Because he talks about like how, look, eventually we're going to run out of food. And when that happens, we're going to start eating each other.
Yeah.
Right. Like maybe it's a good thing that your daughter's not here. Because then he starts getting into like these gross fucked up details about maybe eating her. And she's like, stop it.
It's crazy.
And he's like, listen, I'm saying all this shit because I don't want you out of a fucking fit and killing all of us.
Yeah.
Which happened. Like, I would, like, if that hadn't happened, I would say he's being really unfair. But it did happen.
Right.
He's being completely fair.
Yeah, you're right. Oh. He's like, we cannot have this go bad again.
Yeah, so then, so he flicks his mellow like anyone would a cigarette. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't stomp it out or anything. He just leaves. And then, like, we're like, well, wait, I don't want that to go to waste. So we pick it up, and then we have our first ever drag.
Mm-hmm.
And which is a first for us, because, mm-hmm. like, Origins are never supposed to
drink
be under the influence
yeah.
of anything. Mm-hmm. Like, no drinking, no oxy, no cigarettes,
nothing fun, weed,
none of those things, I think, if other than alcohol, ever comes up in these books.
Yeah.
Alcohol is timeless. It is before history, and it will be after history.
Right, right. It's evergreen.
But yeah, so she takes a drag from this mellow, really does chill her out. Ika comes out. Ika's pissed at her, too.
Yeah.
Understandably so, because it gets into it. Like, she... So Asun goes to Ika. Ika is in conversation with someone, like mm-hmm. some guy. And she's like, listen, do you want to spend your time arguing with me or do you want to be with him in his last moments? Right. Now I'm remembering. because Lerna said the way he started off that conversation was, I'm going to have to kill him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to walk back in there and kill him.
And then they talk about maybe amputating him and, like, you know, maybe he would have lived if it wasn't a season, but...
Like, the fact of the matter is, it is a season. They don't have the resources to keep this guy alive, because even if they did, he would be useless. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'd have to amputate him, because the boil bugs weren't all over him. They were just really on his legs.
But he's not going to survive this.
Yeah.
Therefore, he's going to go kill this man.
And so Ika's outside, like, having a conversation with, I'm guessing, a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And she's straight up like, listen, do you want to spend his last moments arguing with me, or do you want to spend his last moments with him? And so the guy storms off in tears or something.
Yeah.
And Ika is like, says something basically like, don't even fucking start with me. And, you know, we piece together, like, she's the one making the decision to kill him now.
Yeah.
Like, if it hadn't been for removing the boil bugs at all, it would have been really easy. It would have been a mercy killing.
Right.
Right? But now it's something else.
Now he could potentially be saved. They've seen a miracle. They think that...
But it's not enough, because he literally has been boiled, like his legs.
Yeah.
Like chicken.
Oh, my God. Just to add that in there, like chicken.
I really need to, like, make clear to everyone how horrible this is.
It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing.
We don't even say anything to Ika. We just, mm-mm, like, hand her the mellow. And then, like, there's this, like, nice, calm moment where Ika and us, we're just passing the mellow back and forth. And then she has to go to deal with the fact that, like, this guy's gonna go die now. And Yeah, it ends with us going our separate ways. There's sobbing from the infirmary. Ika goes that way, and then we go our separate ways, and that's how it ends.
What a chapter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Fuck that chapter, man.
Fuck that chapter, man.
Oh.
Interlude. Hoa weaves a metaphor by way of explanation.
I don't even remember the interlude.
So it is... It's Hoa kind of explaining Stone Eaters a little bit, but like in a weird way. Like, he doesn't, like, out and out say it. He's just kind of, he's talking metaphorically to kind of explain, like, the vibes of what it's like for a Stone Eater to interact with humans.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, so from what I can gather, there was a war between humans and Stone Eaters, or maybe humans and Evil Earth, and Stone Eaters were, I think, on Earth's side, mm-hmm, which makes sense. But Hoa, he says that, like, war is the wrong word, because humans were viewed by the other side as pests who cracked the planet's surface and lost the moon.
Yeah. How can you do that?
It happens, Chris says. In the interlude, he says that he used to hate humanity once, but he's come to realize that without the Earth, you know, there is no life.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, life has come very close to destroying the planet, and that just can't happen. So, like, he doesn't hate, like, humans, but that doesn't mean he's above betraying Aesun. He has betrayed her, and he will again.
Yeah.
Like, he's manipulating her for his own purposes, and he knows that she's probably going to die. And so, like, this whole interlude, Ho is talking to you. Like,
right. I remember this now.
Yeah. But
he said, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I have my own intentions.
Yeah. But he wants Aesun's life to be worth a damn before he has to do that. So, like... And, like, you know, I think that's interesting, because, like, I'm thinking of an ant farm, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you ever own an ant farm?
No.
Me neither. But, like, I've seen how people that own ant farms, like, think about their ants, right? Like, whenever, like, someone just takes that fucking ant farm and shakes it, they're like, no, you've destroyed their world!
Yeah, literally. Everything they've worked so hard for, and you're playing God.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's... kind of what Hoa's doing. Or maybe not God, but demigod.
Well, sort of, yeah.
He's playing demigod, nothing else.
You know,
like, he is, I don't know what he's doing, but, you know, by his own admission, he's orchestrating events to make a specific thing happen.
He's like, what you're working on is the subplot Okay.
Okay.
But I'm in charge of the overarching.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know where this is going, but your work is important, and we're going to let it have a moment. But you do have to die.
You do have to die. That's probably going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Anyways.
Still love him.
Chapter 5.
Nasoon takes the reins. The little girl's childhood dies along with the world as she knows it.
So this is a day after Jija committed, what is it called when you kill your own child? Is it infanticide? Murder? Well, yeah, it's murder. He committed murder, but like, you know, they have names for types of murder, like patricide.
I have not heard this.
Infanticide. I don't know.
It's terrible either way.
He killed his kid.
Yeah.
Well, he killed his kid. It's fucked. And then like his other kid, daddy's little girl, mm-hmm. goes with him. You know, they're on the cart. They're going south. Jija's behaving differently than normal.
Yeah.
Like, feels like a stranger to
Not the father she remembers.
No. So she's got like this, she has this urge in her to like appease him, mm-hmm. but she's scared. And then she gets over that fear and just starts talking. She just takes his hand and tells him that she wanted to tell him. Yeah. She wanted to tell him, but she couldn't. Mommy mm-hmm. said no, like it was a whole thing. And like he's just not responding.
He does not want to hear this.
And so then he like she just yells at him like, I wanted to tell you, and he fucking smacks her. She falls off the wagon.
Tumbles.
And
it's horrible.
He's immediately apologetic.
Yeah, I know. But I'm still just like, you little bitch.
He's such a slave to his emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like,
not a single ounce of control, which is so interesting because, like, the Origin are always, you know, told that they have no control over their emotions and, like, yada, yada, yada. Well, we look at freaking
Nasoon.
Look at Jija, and he has no, he's the one who doesn't have any fucking control over his emotions.
You know, you saying that just now, it really makes the metaphor click for me because both of these Origin specifically are women.
Yeah.
We've got a little girl and we've got a grown woman. And like you just now talking about that, it made me think of periods.
100 Well, wait.
Because that's what people say. What men say
like hormones.
About
women. Absolutely.
Like, oh, they can't control themselves. They're so hormonal.
Right.
And it's like, man, fuck you.
You're the one who killed your son.
Yeah.
You killed your son.
You killed your son.
And then you just like hit your daughter.
Yeah.
It is The metaphor is crazy.
Anyways, we hate Jija, by the way.
Yeah,
moving on.
He didn't know.
He struck her. She falls out of the wagon. He's deeply conflicted. He doesn't want to kill her because she's a little girl, but mm-hmm. he does want to kill her because she's an origin. Ugh. They cry together. While they do, that's when the Sheiks come at them.
Yeah.
Nasoon is skilled enough to save their lives. And that was a cool scene. Like,
that
it talks about, like, how she uses her power. She, like, she funnels her fucking Taurus into two Tauruses.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like, she makes them into, like, kinetic pylons that she shoves into the ground, metaphorically speaking, and then, like, focuses all of her power on, like, diverting the thing around her far mm-hmm. less elegantly than her mother did it, but like, you know what, she's 8 and it fucking worked.
She makes a ring, and you know what her dumb ass father says? I cannot stand this man. He says, did you do this?
Did I save you? Yeah, asshole.
It kills me.
No, but she's like you know, she's a little girl about it, and she starts manipulating. Like, in this moment, like, in her mind,
she says
she will never think of this mm-hmm. man as daddy ever again. She will think of him as Jija.
Yes.
This man is Jija. And so then the narrative shifts because, like, the narrative, like, oh, from Nasoon's point of view up to this point was daddy.
Mm-hmm.
The moment it says that, from that point on, it is Jija in the narrative. It's not daddy says this, daddy does this, Jija did this shit.
It's insane because, going back, she's 8 years old, and she's making the decision to emotionally manipulate and not trust this man who...
And she knows how to, and it works.
Yeah.
She calls him daddy, but only ever out loud. And it's to manipulate him.
I think for me, what's so interesting is her, like, realizing she made this decision.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not just, like, doing it and not owning it or realizing it. Like, she's like, this is what I have to do to survive.
Yeah.
Like, and internally. I don't trust him anymore. Yeah. He's not who I thought. Mm-mm. And that's for an 8-year-old, that's just crazy.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
It is heartbreaking.
So in this moment, she tells Jija that whatever this was that came from very far up north,
mm-hmm.
She's pretty sure that it's that it's going to be a season and that it's really, really bad.
And mom knows about it already.
Oh, yeah. She says that as an afterthought because she's watching him and she's like guessing what he's thinking. And she's like, mom probably already knows.
Yeah.
And she's not clear about what she's saying there. She's just saying mom knows.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes to whatever conclusions he comes to that results in we're not going back home, because he flicked his eyes back in the direction of home.
Yeah.
And that's when she said it. She was like, mom knows. What does mom know?
That's the thing. Does she know about the season, or does she know that Jija killed?
Both. The answer is both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, that was something that I didn't think about when we first started reading the fifth season, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the beginning of the fifth season, it talks about that, how Aesun, like, stilled everything, like, miles around.
Yeah.
And there was, like, some rangers that noticed and were like, oh, shit, we got an origin in town.
Yeah.
And it talked about how, like, it really recontextualizes that for a bit. Because she was in mourning, like, you know, she, like, had already found the child and had been, like, catatonic with...
Stayed with him for a few days.
For a few days. Yeah. And in the middle of those few days was this. And she stilled it like it was nothing and then just kept mourning.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't care about it. She didn't care that it was the end of the world. The world literally had ended already.
Right.
And, like, really just goes to show, like, how much you should not fuck with these people.
I know.
Like, I get being afraid of them. I get that. Why the fuck does that mean you should, like, be so evil to them?
The people who have some of the most power
are the ones being mistreated the most.
Yes.
Heyo, this is Ryan with an exciting announcement for you. I shall be joined with my co-host Julia Carney in a Maplewood Barn community theater production of Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, the world's longest running play in England and, as far as I'm aware, the world. If you are one of the fortunate few that are listening to this episode within 12 days of episode release, and also have the pleasure of living in Columbia, Missouri, or the nearby vicinity, you will have the opportunity to see Julia and I perform live with 6 other volunteer community actors. Over the course of 2 weeks, there shall be 8 shows, Thursday through Sunday, May 16th through 19th, and then May 23rd through 26th. The box office opens at 7 p.m. and the show begins at 8 o'clock. It is a play in 2 acts with an intermission. The entire show will be a little over 2 hours long. Tickets for adults shall be $13 each. Children 10 and under can purchase tickets for $5 each. And if you are in a group of 10 or more, which I highly encourage you to be, as these events are much more fun with a party, you will be able to purchase your tickets for $10 each. A link to the Maplewood Barn's website shall be included in the episode description, along with the address. Now, if you are one of the unfortunate masses that are hearing about this after the fact, as unfortunately it is a live show and it will come to an end very soon, fret not. While you did not get to see the show, you will be able to see a gallery of photos taken of us on stage that will be included in the episode description. And that concludes this advertisement. I hope you enjoyed that. I have been working on this accent for about 5 weeks. And you can bet your butt that I'm going to be using it a lot from now on. I hope you enjoy that. Back to the show!
So there's a thing here that stuck out to me when I was reading this, which is Nasun's motivations, right?
Yeah.
Because she, you know, even now, with the world ending, with her murderer of a father, she wants to get away from Aesu.
Yeah. For me, I think part of that felt like it fell in this journey of, like, a girl growing up and the complicated feelings you have with your parents, I mean, but also, I mean, in this case, her mom, who has, like, taught her, has obviously been tough on her because, like, at the end of the day, it's, you know, Cyanite.
I mean,
who's teaching a child how to control her powers.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the way you got to look at it. Because, yeah. Like, even though this character changes their identity, they are still the same person.
Yeah. And so she...
Cyanite teaching a kid how to control their powers.
In a life or death situation at all times.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah. Like, she had... I mean, she had a lot on her hands.
So,
but that's not the way that this kid's looking at it.
Yeah.
The way this kid's looking at it, I mean,
she was tough on her, and
she wanted to get the fuck out of
there.
Yeah,
she didn't. Her mom felt oppressive to her, and she
wanted to leave.
Yeah, and her dad didn't have that because, you know, they. Her and her mom had the secret, you know, but her and her dad had just this, like,
they
normal relationship.
They just had a normal, loving father-daughter relationship, and then that's not a thing now.
Yeah.
And at least not in her mind, you know. So, yeah, they keep going south.
And onward.
Onward they go. And so there was a little blurb at the end of this one, which I will read. This is from Tablet 2. The Incomplete Truth, verse 1, which is the following. The season will always return. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's not new information. Thank you.
This is the fifth one, right? Pretty sure.
Chapter 6. You commit to the cause. You speculate about the origins of the stillness, learn about orbital mechanics, and discover magic.
So, this chapter is basically Aesun having a whole-ass conversation with Tonki and then proceeding to have a whole-ass conversation with Alabaster.
Yeah.
Both very interesting conversations, I felt. There was a little bit of world-building in Tonki's conversation.
Yes.
Like, she talks about she talks about her family vault that she broke into when she was a boy, and she, like, talked about, like, all the shit that she found in there. The thing that stood out to me was radioactive material encased in glass. That, like, they didn't say it in those words, but, like, they were talking about a thing that was, like, so dangerous. It was like, do not break this. It'll punch holes through your skin.
Just, like, finding that in your house, you're like, bet. This is some serious shit.
Yeah. And so, yeah, in the vault, she learned about, like, all of this apocryphal stuff that only the, you know, hoity-toity leadership people know.
Right. The Nepo babies.
Shaking my head. The Nepo babies. She she was like, I stole my birthright. She was like, classic Nepo baby.
Classic.
Stealing your birthright? Wow.
Like, real original.
Check your privilege, man. Some of us don't have those. Anyway.
It's true.
Anyways. I have a note here, and I think I have to respect the note. Skipping to the end, but I don't give a shit. Magic!
Yeah, you said the rest. You said there was a lot of world building in this. Let's skip it all. And I love that, Ryan, because...
Magic!
Magic.
So, okay, so we got to talk about... we got to contextualize
this. It's inconsequential, I thought. Or wait, no, that's not... Yeah, that's what
the
he calls
word,
it.
The word, he's like, the thing you call it is inconsequential. And it's like, fuck you, Alabaster. Yes, no, it is consequential because that's what the thing is. That's what the thing that Shaffa is stealing from people. It's their magic. Everyone has a little bit of magic in them, but Origins have more magic, and Origins have so much magic that you can take from them, and it grows back.
And what did I say when I was talking about the wells?
Yeah.
It's the magic
it's
wells.
It's wells of magic. Yeah. Like, fucking hell, dude.
I didn't even, like, fully make that connection until right now. Well, but it's nuts. And yeah. I love that they called it magic.
Yeah. Like, so in that conversation, just contextualizing it, Alabaster said that they used to have a word for what is happening to him, mm-hmm. right? Because he tells us, he's like, hey, look closer. Mm-hmm. Keep looking closer. Look even closer. Like, and she's like, what is that? And Alabaster is like, what is that? Like, just being mm-hmm. a dick. And because she's able, through sessing, because she is at an advanced enough degree, like, it's in this conversation, he's like, you could have been, like, an eight ringer or
yeah,
whatever. Like,
yes.
I don't remember specifically which ring he said, but, like.
She's sessing him.
He might have even said, like, you have gone beyond 10 rings.
Yeah.
Which.
I can't remember. I thought that he said that, too, at one point.
I don't know.
She's got a whole.
She's
of
high
rings.
Up on the
ring.
She's high up on mm-hmm. Up there. Not quite as high as him. Mm-hmm. I think he did say eight or nine ringer now.
Yeah.
But he was like, look closer, and she could then see the fucking magic in him turning him into stone. She because I remember before she found it, she was like, this is so gross. Everything's yeah. wet in here.
Yeah. It's nasty visual.
She's like, oh, she has half a thought, like, at least with the earth, you know, the wet is like, it, you know, it's not part of the stone.
Well, do you think, yeah, and do you think that she could suss the magic out of him and heal him?
That's a good question. I hadn't considered that. I mean, she did kind of do that with the poison.
Right.
In the first book. But that's on a cellular level. Mm-hmm. And the way they describe the magic
is it's like more.
It's more intricate than that.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of it, but it's a lot smaller. Like the way they talked about it, it was, hold on. Yeah, it's small and strange, too close and almost too tiny, but it's there because at least the outermost layer of him is rock. Calcium and carbon and flecks of oxidized iron that must have once been blood and, what is that? What is that? There's something in this stuff that you're, this stone stuff, it's not, I don't know. It's rock and not. Can you sess the flesh further down the arm? She's like hesitant. He's like, look again, Cyan. Don't be a coward. She narrows her focus further still between the gelidity moving too, but in a slower and less organic way, you suddenly see the same thing you found in the stone of him. Something else, neither flesh nor stone. Something immaterial, and yet it is there for you to perceive. It glimmers in the thread strung between the bits of him, crossing itself in lattices, shifting constantly. Tension and energy, shiny and streaming, potential, intention. And he says the name of that is inconsequential. The thing that we used to call that is inconsequential. We called it magic.
It's crazy.
Like, it really paints a picture of what happened in our world.
And that's her Hugo Award right there.
Right there.
That is it in a sentence, I think. And the just, like, nonchalantness of, like, it's inconsequential, this, like, beautiful thing. And the fact that it's, like, an answer to so much of, like, how things
how
work.
How is all of this happening?
Yes.
And the, like, answer is magic, duh.
Yeah. And I just love that because it's like.
They don't address that in the first book even a little bit.
But get yourself together. How did you not know?
I thought it was a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought.
So good.
But yeah, that's with Alabaster, mm-hmm. who, by the way, has a knife that is also an obelisk.
The fuck?
Right? Like, did you remember that part?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, like, she was glancing at something that, like, next to him, she sessed it, and it was like an obelisk, but it obviously wasn't.
I don't remember that part, but that's amazing. So that means he can take these obelisks.
I don't know what he can do with the thing. I imagine
can
it's
he
like,
make it small? Can he like assess it to be tiny to turn it into jewelry?
I don't think you transfigure things by assessing.
Well, I don't know. Compressing.
I think it's like his magic wand for obelisks.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
But how'd he get it?
I mean, what's he been doing the past 10 years? We don't know.
He's been a busy man, turns out.
He got stolen away by Antimony.
Yeah, that's
true. Or was it Antinomy? Antimony.
But she's been busy.
She's been busy.
Yeah, keeping him busy, at least, with whatever.
Busy enough.
Making these obelisk wands, I guess.
So, yeah.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, we broached the moon topic with Tonki, and she's like, I don't know what the fuck a moon is, but I can tell you about satellites.
Right.
And she's basically like, listen, I learned a little bit about orbital mechanics when I was at university. It wasn't my thing, though. I was, like, into obelisks. And,
right.
Because she talks about how the obelisks are satellites.
Right.
To explain what a satellite is.
To an origin.
Right.
Yeah.
Which was, I mean, you know. Things floating around fucking the earth. Like, these people are so focused inwardly. None of them are looking up and out and thinking about the stars and shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not true. What's his face who died at the end of the last book? He was there for, like, two chapters, so I don't remember his name.
Right, but he was there.
He was talking.
Their lover. I forget his name.
Yeah, Aesun's lover, back when she was Cyanite. Her lover was...
And Alabaster's.
Yes. And Alabaster's. Spicy, not quite three-way. He was talking about the stars and how, like, you know, people speculate that there's other people on those stars.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. And she's like, nobody fucking talks about this shit.
Look up, you know?
No, none of them fucking look up. None of them care. But, I mean, like, at the same time, like, I suppose...
Everything's happening on the ground.
Everything's happening on the ground.
The earth is the thing that's crumbling and shaking. And so it's like, why? I'm not concerned about what's going on up there.
A lot is invested in orbital mechanics. Yeah. It is a thing still. There are people that get that kind of education still, but not many, you know?
Yeah.
And so she is kind of getting into that with Aesun and talking about how these things kind of fly around. And they're talking about the moon. And I thought it was so interesting how, like it's not a word in their vocabulary, right? She doesn't know how far out she should space the oo sound.
Mm-hmm.
Mon? Moon? Moon? Mm. I don't know. She doesn't know.
Yeah,
they don't have a fucking moon, Julia.
But they know what it does.
they don't.
That's right. Like, she doesn't know what a moon is, but she knows what a satellite is.
She knows what a satellite is, but I don't think she's comprehended like the size of the moon when we had one.
Like how big it was.
I don't think she understands what a moon is still.
Right. I guess I don't know why. I just thought that she thought the moon and the satellite were the same thing.
I mean, in a way they are. But, like, she started thinking about the obelisk and comparing them to the obelisk.
Right.
And then she was like, well, no, I was just using obelisks to, like, explain to you what satellites are. They're kind of like satellites, but they're their own thing. And then she gets excited about obelisks.
I know.
And, like, how they follow a, like, trajectory. And this is how, like, you know, she's been spending all of this time, like, researching this specific woman, us, and, like, obelisks, and how there was a few following her around.
Yeah.
Like, and that's how she figured out, like, where the hell she's been, because these things have an orbit, and the orbit is origins they latch onto.
Do you think they need, like, telescopes to see some of these obelisks?
I mean, in detail. But, like, the way they talk about them, it's like an upper mid-atmosphere.
Right.
Like, these things have been in the sky all the time, and they don't look at them. They don't want to look at them.
It's just, like, but you would think if they're the size of, like, you know, whenever you can see, like, Jupiter or whatever.
I feel like
whatever.
It's the size of planes, relatively, for us. Like, right? Or, like, helicopters.
Yeah.
It's something that's in the sky but doesn't make any noise.
You're right. Wow. It's just there floating, and it's
Well, we don't know what they do. It's some dead Civ artifact that floats around in the sky. They don't matter. But they do actually matter. That's why they mentioned them in the prologue.
Yep. They said, nope, that has nothing to do
with
me.
By the way, this book didn't get a prologue. That's kind of why I think I agree with you that, like,
They didn't put me through that.
She did all the books at once.
Yeah. I that prologue was a moment for me.
She broke into the fulcrum in search of the socket to confirm that the knowledge her family possessed was legitimate. That's what she did, mm-hmm. what Tonki did. And she speculates that it's possible that the obelisks predate the Shattering, which was like the first fifth season.
Mm-hmm.
And also probably the event that made the moon go away.
Something's broken with those obelisks.
But there's also speculation that the obelisks like are the reason why the planet still exists.
Right, but there could still be something broken within them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You think it's not that? I feel like we need to revisit that chapter in the fifth season about sockets. Because, like,
there's so much to remember about how everything works.
That was actually a very pivotal chapter. Yeah. And I think we didn't realize how big of a deal it was.
We should reread that okay.
before we, like, continue with the next episode.
I know. Because yeah. that's what's, like, there will be moments where I feel like, okay, I understand the magic system. Yeah. I know what's going on. I understand how all of this works. And then I'm like, but what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And then you're really good at this.
You're a good writer. We love these books.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
They are amazing.
Let's see. What else do I have in my notes? I don't want to leave anything out. So yeah, Tonki and Aesun, they discuss that the Shattering was even an actual event.
Mm-hmm.
Tonki reckons it was for evolutionary reasons. Yeah, they talk about evolution.
Yeah.
Earth's creatures aren't different enough, basically, is what she says. Mm-hmm. You know, many of them evolved ways to survive fifth seasons, but if the world always had them, she doesn't think that the creatures would change the way that they do to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that is what a lot of these creatures do, other than humans, and even then, arguably humans too. What the fuck do you think origins are, you stupid people that think origins aren't people? They, like, Kirkusas, which I don't know what the fuck those are, like, but they change drastically. They're like cheap dogs, is what mm-hmm. they say. And the reason why they're so cheap is because they go fucking rabid and eat people when fifth seasons happen. Same thing with these boil bugs. Same thing with...
they all change a little.
Yeah.
Evolution.
I think at one point they talked about how a specific bird species changed to survive fifth seasons. And she was like, the metaphor she has is, it's like if we had a wagon wheel that broke a spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Evolutionarily, this is the new spoke. Like, and that's why she doesn't think that, like, we've always had fifth seasons. Which, I mean, if we go by my hypothesis,
mm-hmm.
I think this is our world. I think we discovered magic. I think we broke the world. And then, as a result of that, we've got origins. Stone Eaters, I think, have always been there. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I think it's that, like, our culture, our society, our current civilization, we discovered magic, broke the fucking world, and this is the result.
Now we have fifth seasons.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if they're going to confirm that or if it matters. But
do you think that... Ooh, this may get complicated because you may be like, do you understand anything that's going on
in
this book?
And I do.
Do you think that the magic that was found, that predates Origine? That's what you think?
I think Origine, like the magic that is Origine, is something that resulted from the discovery of magic and whatever.
How did they use magic before that then?
I think they used it to build the obelisks.
Yeah.
For sure. But as far as anything else goes, it's hard to say because these people think that dead civs don't matter.
Right.
Like, they're literally like, if whatever civilization they created, like, mattered, it would have survived, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't even give a shit about the obelisks because they are functionally useless to them.
That's just, it's so interesting. There's nobody there with a, who's just, well, there's probably a few people who are wondering about.
There's people like Tonki who go to, like, the university, because that's what some of these other blurbs talk about, too. Like, we have 7th University. So named because 6 others have been destroyed. One of them got destroyed because they tried doing experiments on stone eaters.
Oh, my God.
I think they said it was 5th University was destroyed because of stone eater shenanigans.
Stone eater shenanigans.
Not on their part, on humans.
Oh, my God.
They sent a direct message. They were like, don't fuck with us.
I feel like this whole book could be called Stone Eater Shenanigans. And it would fit.
Okay, I think that's everything. That was the last chapter. Wow. How long have we been going, Chris?
He's like 3 hours.
Okay,
oh, that
cool.
was right on.
That's a good
cool.
wrap up. That we chatted for an hour about it. Anyways, I hope you guys have enjoyed us going on about this book. We enjoyed it. I mean, we're very high now.
Nope.
Bye.
Bye.